Welcome to Self-Taught, where former foster youth, like myself, share our real-life experiences with sex, health, and life. Hosted by the Reproductive Health Equity Project, these are some conversations we wish we'd had earlier.
Hello, lovely listeners. Thanks for being here with us today. I am Kat, and I'm kind of out of the general Sacramento area a little bit, and I'm here to learn a little bit about someone who I kind of know, but not super well. And I'm here to find out more about them and their personal story. And that's Emilio.
Hi, Kat. It's nice to be here. Thanks for having me. My name is Emilio Valladolid, and I use they, them, theirs pronouns.
Okay. Well, first of all, as I said earlier, thank you for being here with us, talking about like the most personal thing that there is, which is your life. And I appreciate that. And I think the reason that you're here is because we hope that other people will hear your story and be able to appreciate that too. So let me start off by saying I'm an idiot. So if I say something that is not like the right way of saying something, just know like my heart is in the right place and my intentions are in the right spot, but I haven't learned all of these new social rules that we have. And so feel free to like correct me and just know that like I have so much respect for you as an individual. So yeah, feel free to let me know if like I'm way off. And to that,
yeah, we're all learning, and that's what we're here for. So
thank you.
I'm happy to help.
To start off with is like who you are and how you identify, and maybe like a little bit of about like how that came to be, if you want to.
Sure. So like I said, my name before is Emilio. And I use they, them pronouns, which for me ties into being trans and non-binary. Which are two terms that are very popular right now, but a lot of people still don't know what they mean. And for me, being trans is something that's very personal, but also something that's very important about my identity. And it generally means that you identify with a different gender that you were assigned than the one you were assigned at birth. And to me, being non-binary means that I'm not a man or a woman. And that can be many things for me at many different times. And that's super exciting because it gives me a lot of flexibility and a lot of fluidity. And it's really cool to know that about myself. Some other stuff about me. I'm about to be 20 years old, which is super exciting. Almost 2 decades.
When's your birthday?
February 17th.
Oh, happy.
So it's close. Yeah. What else? I also am Mexican. Both my parents are from Mexico, and I was raised in that culture. I am also neurodivergent. And to me, that means that my brain works differently than most of society. And that's super cool because I'm like a super, I have a little superpower that a lot of people don't have. I see things very differently. And to me, that's just super exciting.
Yeah. Do you have any like examples of like a time when something happened and you were like, do I have a superpower? Like, do you have like any anecdotes of a time that maybe helped you get to the point where you were like, I think I might be neurodivergent. I'm going to ask my doctor about this. Or
yeah. So for the most part, I've had a lot of difficulties growing up. So I didn't really see it as a good thing. And I didn't know what it was to be neurodivergent. I just knew that I was different. Right. And that was a huge theme for me growing up because I knew I was different in many different ways. Right. I didn't know I was trans when I was younger. I had just turned 14. And that was a huge part of my journey, right? Was to figure that part of myself out. And as I've gotten older, I've realized like I still feel like the odd person out a lot of the time. So I did a lot of research into the autistic community specifically, and I really resonated with a lot of what I found, and I felt really heard by that community. And lately I've been talking to doctors and trying to get diagnosed, not trying to get diagnosed, seeing if I meet the diagnostic criteria. But for me, it was a lot of just feeling out of place. And I think that is something that as a former foster youth, we all feel, right? We feel out of place. We feel like plucked out and put in a situation that is not ours, really, right? But I felt that in so many different ways. It was overwhelming.
Do you have any like little peek into, you know, some time in school where you just, you know, what, either you just like blew this test out of the water for no reason, or maybe you were like, I don't know why, but I like could not wrap my head around this thing that was for everybody else could do it for some reason, or is there like,
yeah, my biggest thing was probably just any social interaction I had. It was like everyone had like a cheat code and that I didn't have it, right? So people would talk and they would have conversations and know what to say next and where to go and what they were trying to get at. And I was just kind of like flopping around. And to me, that felt like a really, really like big deficit from like about me. But I realized that when I talk to other people who are autistic or neurodivergent, the conversation just flows differently, right? So to me, that was just like finding out like who are my people and how like to manage every other interaction that I had.
But what has it been like finding a community of other people that are like you, either, you know, any part of your identity that kind of makes you like sets you aside?
It's been an amazing journey for me. I mean, even with the pandemic, things have been a lot different, right? So we're not talking in person right now, which is different, and work's been online and school's been online and everything, and I've had to balance all that. But I can speak to before the pandemic. I'm located in San Diego, so there's a bigger LGBT center here and there's little youth centers, and I was super into the community, like into the queer and trans community here in San Diego. I would go like several times a week to talk to other queer and trans youth and to adults. And I was just really into the community, basically. And to me, that was super beautiful because, I mean, as a former foster youth, family was a really hard thing to tackle sometimes, right? You don't know who you consider family, and you have very little family, if that. So chosen family for me was huge, and I really felt loved by my community when I was able to reach out and they were able to reach out and be like, hey, we care about you, we see you as who you are, and we want to get to know you even more.
Have you ever seen a Peanut Butter Falcon?
No.
Oh, it's a movie, and it, anyway, like they're whole line in the movie, like the big moment is when he says, you know, friends are the family you choose. And I think that's like probably everybody's favorite moment in that movie. Yeah. And I think it totally matters for foster kids and stuff. So it, I mean, if you had, you know, younger Emilio or some kid that's maybe not really super sure about who they are yet, but they think maybe they belong at one of these centers, like what was your first day of stepping through those doors like? Because I know for me, when I want to join a community, if I don't already know somebody on the inside, it's really hard for me to just like walk in and be like, hi, I'm here to be part of your community. You know, that could be so intimidating. Yeah. So like, what was that like getting through the door? And is there one or two people in particular that really like grabbed you and kept you there?
So I will agree with you. I had the hardest time getting myself to step out of my comfort zone and go in the first place, right? But I realized that the whole basis of these kind of centers and the communities that I was involved with was that they accepted you as you were, right? They were meeting you as you were, and they wanted to help you grow and become more of yourself. So with that in mind, I kind of was like, okay, well, I know I need support, and I know these people are going to understand me at least more than typical like society does.
What gave you that kind of faith, like that they would? Was it just kind of like just generally that you felt like you belonged there and so you just jumped for it? Or did you know what I mean? Like what gave you the idea in your mind that you were like, yeah, I'm gonna go for it. This is worth a shot.
Well, to be honest, it's more, I'm drawing more from like a historical standpoint. I mean, historically, like as a Mexican person, I know that in Mexican culture, you make food for the whole family, for example, and you make food for anyone who might come over and everything. So it's a very like come one, come all type of thing. And with the LGBT community specifically as well, like that's a huge like theme that I've seen. And I knew that there was like, I belonged somewhere and I wasn't finding it. So there was that kind of pull from me to find that somewhere. So I like kind of faced my fears and I was like, I'm going to give it a chance. And I found a lot of love.
That's awesome. And I hope that everybody finds love in their life. You know, we all need community for sure. So that was when you were 14, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I, up until now, and like I said, I'm almost 20. I've been really into the community. And that's given me a lot of strength and a lot of confidence, which is super nice because I'm not the most confident person. But I have even done things like gotten up and spoken in front of hundreds of people. I've interned at some of the communities, like some of the centers that I participated in and kind of taken a leadership role. I've even done like leadership what are they called? Leadership academies. It's been really interesting to not just be part of it, but also be affecting change like in other people.
Yeah, they helped you and now you're contributing back to that cause.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. You say you're not super confident, but you've done all these things. I mean, maybe the having that background of not being super confident was almost like a qualifier for like what you have to say is almost more meaningful to the person that, you know, needs to hear it most. I don't know if that makes sense, but so it sounds like you've had some people react really well to your identity. So was it just like around like roughly puberty time when you were like, this is like kind of different, or has this been like a lifelong thing? Or do you recall like some of the first times when you're like, I don't think I'm fitting inside that box very well?
Yeah. I definitely felt like that my whole life. A lot of the time, I think the defining factor for me was I didn't have the knowledge of what being trans was, of what being autistic was, of even the fact that I was growing up in a family that was like not typical to other families. All of those experiences really shaped me because I didn't have the language, right? So I couldn't reach out for help, or I couldn't tell someone like, no, that's not right, because I didn't know any better.
We talked about your experience and joining this community, and now you've really, you know, found like a safety net, which is amazing. And I think everybody needs to have that, really. For sure. And but what about for people that like, or maybe we talked a little bit about people that have given you that safety net and given you a really good like confirming response almost. And do you want to tell any stories about people that have really made you feel comfortable in this identity, or maybe people that don't know as much, like something that you wish could have gone differently?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've had multiple experiences, right? As I'm sure any other trans person has. But something that I think about, especially as a former foster youth, was being in group homes. They would put me in, they would have everyone in rooms assigned by gender, right? And they would put me in one room and the other room, and it would kind of give fuel to the fire for people who are like, no, you're this, or no, you're this. Well, you're in a girl's room. Well, you're in a boy's room. And it would kind of not give me a fighting chance, right? And that was a huge thing for me, was I felt like society is so focused on this binary, right, of male and female, of man and woman, of pink and blue, that a lot of the time I wasn't heard. And when I was heard, I was the only one talking, kind of thing.
Could you speak a little bit more to that? Like, okay, so either the system is not hearing your voice because it's not, for whatever reason, it is not tailoring to the individual needs of the kids within the system. But then maybe there's a situation where your voice does get heard, but you're the only one talking because there's like a small, I mean, the population of transgender foster youth is like 5%. Is that correct? Something like that?
I'm not sure of statistics. However, no, there's a huge presence of LGBTQ youth in the foster system. Of course, that stems from like basically being kicked out or being mistreated because of your identity. And even when I was in care, I met so many different youth that would even come to me and be like, hey, like, I know you're out as trans, like, I'm bisexual. I've never told anyone that before. And that really was a defining moment every time it happened to me, because it really showed me that like there's so many different people out there, and we're all playing a part. And in foster care, that's really like honed in on, I feel like you grow up in a family that's already like turbulent, and then you get shot into the system that like doesn't always care for you the same way that you should be cared for.
What I was saying earlier is, like you said, there's a huge presence of foster youth that are LGBTQ+. I know it's a bit of a mouthful, but I said it right, right? So there's this huge presence, and it's roughly like double what non-foster youth is. So the trans is like roughly double, and every other LGBT is almost double the regular. I don't have my numbers in front of me, but that is to my memory. And if I'm wrong, I will come back and eat humble pie. And I was wondering, I'm like, what is the, you know, what is causing that correlation? Because that's I mean, 5% isn't a huge number, but that's a significant change, double in both. And you said that a lot of that is because people get kicked out of their homes when they come out about who they feel like they really are. And that's, I think, really interesting. And I just kind of wanted to go back and make sure that we don't skim over that really important point, because that has implications for the whole population and could mean something to what our system needs to do to meet these needs better.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's something that a lot of people don't realize, is that, the reasons that bring you into foster care can be so many, right? And you can be in foster care for a little while, or you can be in it for your whole life. But it still changes everything about who you see yourself as and how you're seen by other people. And there is a huge presence of LGBTQ plus youth in foster care. Like you said, because there's all sorts of complexities and nuances that come with being trans or queer or lesbian or gay or any of those identities, and that often gets complicated with family, with any relative that you may be living with, and that often can lead you into care. And then you have to deal with everything that comes with that, whether you're dealing with, like I said, the boys and girls rooms and trying to navigate that, or you're dealing with trying to really do anything. There's so many rules and so many things that are hard to do when you're part of the queer community or the trans community, and you're also in foster care.
Yeah, it's almost like you went through this really hard thing and then you get put into care, and then now you get put into more hard things because of it. And I know for a lot of people, they end up running away from their foster home because they're treated so poorly there. So then you go from like losing your home to losing your foster home to now a lot of people are homeless, and, you know, just because, like, where do they belong? Because they haven't been able to find that community. And it's, you know, hopefully we could do something. Hopefully Rep is doing, you know, we can kind of put a face out there and like be able to help people, like, hey, you can find a community. Like Amelia found their community and like it's out there.
Yeah. I think a huge part of that is just education. I mean, like I touched on a little bit before, like I've done a lot of work with education, specifically regarding the LGBT community, and I've spoken to people, I've spoken to judges and social workers and CASAs and everyone who's involved in the kind of foster youth lives sphere. And I think
did you say CASAs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Court appointed special advocate.
Is that correct? Yes.
Yes. Okay. For people that don't know, CASAs are, like, as far as I know, are little angels that come by and they hold the hand of whatever child is going through a court case. And did you have a CASA?
Yeah, I did. She was really great. Like, she was one of those people in my life who wanted to, like, get to know me and wanted to fight for me, which I didn't have a lot, especially in foster care. As a young teen, right? I think something that was really impactful for me that my CASA worker did was a few years into my journey as with figuring out who I was, right? Especially in regards to my gender, I decided that I wanted to start hormone replacement therapy. And being in foster care, that's not an easy thing to do, right? Because any medication you take, any trip you take, anything has to be approved by a judge, and you need all this backup for it. So I knew that I wanted to start hormone replacement therapy, and then it was going to be a journey. But my CASA was really helpful because she was one of the few people who didn't have an opinion at the beginning. I had my mom, who was not supportive of me starting hormone replacement therapy. And then I had my social worker, who was like, okay, if that's going to make you happy, like, you can do it, but I don't know anything about it. So there was all these opinions being thrown at me. And my CASA didn't necessarily have one at the beginning. She just wanted to listen to me, and she wanted to do her research, and she wanted to find out why I wanted to start it in the first place, and why it was an important thing to my development, and how it was going to help me be a better me. So throughout that journey, I would talk to her a lot, and I would tell her, like, you know, my journey's been really difficult, and this is something that would help me really affirm who I was, and it would help me present differently in society. And just, it was just something that I knew I needed, and I knew I wanted, and I knew would give me the strength to deal with everything that I was dealing with, but it felt so far away. And I actually went to court for to start hormone replacement therapy, and I almost thought I wasn't going to get it. I had been fighting for years, going to endocrinology appointments and seeing doctors, and going to therapy, and I had letters saying that I had gender dysphoria, which were also really hard things to get. But I still thought that that wasn't going to be in reach for me. And it was my CASA who spoke up and was like, you know, I think this kid knows what they're talking about. I think they know who they are, and we need to trust them. And the judge did award me like approval to start hormone replacement therapy, and that changed my whole life. It was a huge deal for me, and it was what I really needed. And to have someone believe me at such a young age that I knew who I was and I knew what I needed was really impactful for me.
I mean, it sounds like that CASA person, you know, is like me. Like, I don't really know much about this stuff, but if that works for you, then like, let's do it, you know? And it sounds like your mom was that's
the takeaway. From what I know, she did a lot of research on her own as well. Like, she listened to me, and that was amazing. But she would also do stuff like this and watch podcasts and listen to, I remember she would tell me, like, her daughter had, a trans friend, and she would like hear from what her daughter knew about her friend, and just any like outlet that she could find, she would absorb that information and see how that applied to me basically and my life. And then also she was able to not just listen and be like, okay, so I get it, you're trans, this is what trans people do. She was really good at talking to me individually and tailoring my experience and my life to the general like scope of things.
Well, so it sounds like we could ask, you know, if there was an adult right now that wanted to know what they could do to do better, they have a pretty good direction with where to go, which is to just try to give people faith that they know what's best for them. And I know personally that seems like a huge theme in all foster youth too, not just the LGBT community, but, you know, kids that are in foster care, they tend to grow up a little bit quicker because they have to, and they become a little bit more mature, and maybe they're more ready to make those decisions. So for someone who is in foster care, maybe a younger Emilio or somebody, what would you want them to have to take away from, or, you know, what would you want to be different for them, or what would you want them to have for advice, or anything, any way you want to interpret that?
Sure. I think a huge thing for me is that a lot of young people don't have room to kind of explore themselves, right? In any means of life, like, from the day you're born, they tell you, you're a girl, you're a boy, you wear this, you wear that, we don't do this as a family, or we do only do this. And there's just all these rules, all these constructs. And it's really hard to break out of that sometimes. I know as a kid, like, it was hard for me to do anything that was against the rules, but that was all of who I was. I was very headstrong, I've been told. And I wouldn't change for other people. And I think that's important to, especially like young people, is that if you know who you are, like, that's good. And if you don't know who you are, that's also good. Like, you should have the room to explore your gender, explore your sexuality, explore your favorite color, explore your favorite food. That's why we try so many things, right? So that was something that I found out later on, is that, like, if I like something, I like that thing. If I don't like something, I'll find out. But there's no harm, as long as there's no harm in trying new things, then go for it.
Thanks for stopping by. To hear more and support our cause, check out fosterreprohealth.org for more resources.